Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated November 8th, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 136 updates, 24/7 at newsgazette.com. Illinois impact, another pandemic high for new cases statewide. Champaign County reports 31st death. Region 6 rate at 10.2%. For the fourth time this week, the state broke its pandemic record for most new cases. Monday was 9,810 cases. Thursday, 9,935 cases. Friday, 10,376 cases. Saturday, 12,428 cases. A man in his 50s with underlying conditions became the 31st Champaign County resident to lose their life to COVID-19. CU Public Health's Julie Pride said it was the county's second virus-related death in as many days. Douglas, Illinois' 58th most populous county, became the 46th to surpass 1,000 total cases. The number of county residents hospitalized with COVID-19 shrunk by one in both Champaign, which has 6, and Vermilion, which has 21. Active cases were down 118, and in all 5 zip codes in Champaign-Urbana, 61820 Champaign, 126 down 65, 61821 Champaign, 63 down 16, 61801 Urbana was 57, down 9. 61822 Champaign, 52, down 15. 61802 in Urbana, 26, down 13. And Region 6's 7-day positivity rate held at 10.2%. 11 of 21 counties have rates in double digits, led by Effingham, 18.2%, Fayette, 17.5%, Iroquois, 15.3%, and Clay at 14.8%. Continuing, the next article titled, New Start, this is for election 2020. Biden becomes 46th president after claiming Pennsylvania. Harris breaks multiple barriers as vice president-elect. Opinion by Tom Kasich. From presidential race on down the ballot, Champaign County continues leftward lean. Once again, Champaign-Urbana stands almost alone as an island of blue in a sea of red counties. Unofficial returns show that the two cities went overwhelmingly for Democrat Joe Biden for president. He won every one of the 62 precincts in Champaign and Urbana, 23 of them with more than 80% of the vote. But most of the rest of the precincts in Champaign County went for President Donald Trump, although not by as great a margin. As of Friday, Biden had 59.6% of the county's vote to 37% for Trump. Biden's numbers in the county are more than 5 percentage points greater than Hillary Clinton's 4 years ago. Trump's are a half percentage point better. But almost every other county in the area was solid red. From Piatt County's 63.7% for Trump to Iroquois County's 77.6% for the president. New this year was that McLean County, home of Bloomington Normal and Illinois State University, moved into the blue column, giving Biden 50.5% to 46.6% for Trump. Like Champaign County, there was an urban-rural split. Biden was favored in Bloomington by 55% to 41%. Now, for a deeper dive into some of the local election numbers. Republicans' best precinct in the county was Stanton, the rural area north of St. Joseph and west of Royal. There, Trump got 84.3% of the vote, and other GOP candidates did even better. Coroner Dwayne Northrup, the only Republican to win countywide, got 89.2% in Stanton. The proposal to implement a graduated income tax in Illinois failed with 91.7% voting no, and a small property tax increase for the Champaign County Forest Preserve District lost by 28 percentage points. Democrats' best showing was City of Champaign 1, the predominantly black precinct in North Champaign, where Biden got 92.7%. Clinton had scored 93.4% 4 years earlier. Most other Democrats did as well or better, except for U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who got 85%. Independent candidate Willie Wilson, a black Chicagoan, took 9.2% in the precinct, although just 1.5% countywide. The graduated income tax was approved 79% to 21%, but as in Stanton Township, the tax hike for the Forest Preserve District lost by 10 percentage points. Vote totals in the 8 precincts, populated mainly by the University of Illinois students, were well below their 2016 totals. 5,050 votes this year, 8,823 votes 4 years ago. Students voted overwhelmingly for Biden by about 86 to 13%. Trump got the same percentage, 60, in the 5 Mahomet precincts that he got 4 years ago. His percentage increased, though, in the 3 St. Joseph precincts from 67 4 years ago to 70 this year. Rantoul isn't the Republican stronghold it was a generation ago. Trump won the 6th precincts in the Village with just 52.4% of the vote. You might recall that there was a strong push early on for people to vote by mail rather than in person. But although more than 27,000 in Champaign County voted by mail, the vast majority voted in person, either early at the Brookins Center or other locations, 41,830, or on Election Day, 26,156. The vote by mail and Election Day electorate in Champaign County were as different as night and day. Biden is winning the vote by mail group by about 4-1, 21,877 to 4,491, but Trump won the Election Day block, 14,850 to 9,984. Vote by mail counting will continue in Illinois until November 17th. State Representative Carol Ammons, Democrat Urbana, got 78.6% of the vote in her first contested race since 2014. That year, she got 61.4% over Republican Kristen Williamson. This time, her opponent was the underfunded, nearly invisible Brad Beilert, a libertarian from Champaign. Champaign County's conversion from deep red 40 years ago to deep blue is complete. In the late 1970s and early 1980s, there was generally one countywide Democratic elected official. Today, there is one countywide Republican official, Northrup, who won re-election with about 51% of the vote. 2 incumbent Republicans got caught in the local blue wave. Circuit Clerk Katie Blakeman is losing to Democrat Susan McGrath by about 385 votes, and Recorder of Deeds Mark Sheldon fell to Mike Ingram by more than 2,900 votes. Republicans were heartened by U.S. Representative Rodney Davis's big win in the 13th Congressional District. He swamped Democrat Betsy Dirksen Lonergan by about 10 percentage points, well above his 1% win 2 years ago. Although Lonergan won Champaign County with 67%, McLean County with about 57%, and Sangamon County with about 55%, Davis demolished Londrigan in the 11 other counties in the district. In Davis's home county, Christian, he got 75.9% to Londrigan's 24%. Davis's campaign tied Londrigan to Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, who is despised in most parts of a downstate Illinois. It's a strategy that also helped unseat Illinois Supreme Court Justice Thomas Kilbride and to defeat the graduated income tax proposal. Finally, Champaign County established a record for voter turnout. The latest count said that 95,515 people voted, up from the previous record of 92,842 4 years ago. There are still 2,855 ballots outstanding, according to the Illinois State Board of Elections. As of now, more than 74% of the registered voters in the county voted this fall. As recently as the 1996 election, turnout was only 68,090. Tom Kasich's column appears on Sundays in the News Gazette, and he can be reached at kasich@newsgazette.com. Continuing on the front page, the next article under coronavirus response titled, Going Into a Nightmare. As number of cases continues to rise, so does urgent need for contact tracers at Health District, by Deborah Pressey. Champaign, wanted, contact tracers, pay $15 an hour. The job? Helping rein in a raging pandemic with no end in sight. The use of contact tracers by public health agencies to help control the spread of infectious diseases isn't new, but COVID-19 has created an urgent need for many more people to do the job. As of late July, the American Medical Association called for at least 100,000 additional contact tracers in the U.S. as states continued to lift restrictions intended to control the spread of the virus. Part of the job of contact tracing is to interview by phone people who have tested positive for COVID-19, then call the people with whom they've been in close contact and deliver the news nobody wants to hear, that they're going to need to stay home for 2 weeks and away from other people. Nobody wants to be in quarantine, said Shanisha Walker, a contact tracer for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. New COVID-19 cases continue to pile up, and with the recent surge, it's been kind of crazy, Walker said. All of us are really trying to get through it all, and it's so much, so many cases, it's impossible, she said. Who are close contacts of infected people? The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say that's anyone they have been within 6 feet of for 15 minutes or more, including up to 48 hours before they develop symptoms or test positive. While nobody may want to be in isolation or quarantine, there's a reason to consider doing it anyway. It is estimated that each infected person can, on average, infect 2 to 3 others, said a report by the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. This means that if one person spreads the virus to 3 others, that first positive case can turn into more than 59,000 cases in 10 rounds of infections. The health district jumped on contact tracing early in the pandemic and currently has a staff of 76 in its operation, plus 9 more contact tracers about to start, according to Administrator Julie Pride. Hiring is ongoing, especially with the expectation that new positive cases are going to escalate even more as people are confined indoors through the winter and ignore advice to refrain from gathering for the holidays, she said. I'm going to keep hiring and keep hiring and keep hiring as many as I can because we're going into a nightmare, Pride said. The Vermilion County Health Department has been handling all its contact tracing with pre-pandemic staff. But the surge in cases there has made it difficult to keep up, according to Administrator Doug Toole. He hopes to get some new contact tracers hired, trained, and on the job before the holiday season. Early on in the pandemic, Toole recalled, health officials had no idea what they were getting into. Had he known then what he knows now, he said, he would have asked for different resources. Nobody said to us, imagine this is going to get worse every month, he said. The Douglas County Health Department just hired two more contact tracers, and including its three nurses, now has a staff of 15 contact tracers on the job, according to spokeswoman Summer Phillips. The new staff members are helping the health department keep up with contact tracing within normal hours for the first time, she said. We try to let them know how important the work is that they're doing because it is not always easy, Phillips said. 6 out of 10 are cooperative. Walker, who has a bachelor's degree in business administration, joined the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District as a contract tracer this past July and became a contact tracing team lead by the end of August. Not the most stressful job she's ever had. That was cleaning hotel rooms, she said. But there are challenges to doing this work. Responses from people being called range from a willingness to cooperate to angry refusals. I would say 6 out of 10 are cooperative, Walker said. The other 4 are definitely not. Some of what contact tracers encounter are people who won't pick up the phone or return calls and have to be called repeatedly. Some who believe the call isn't legitimate. Some who think the pandemic is fake. And some who won't provide the names for their close contacts and some who make it clear they won't cooperate with a quarantine. One guy was so mad the F word was every other word, Walker recalled. I say, I understand, sir, but I'm sorry, you still have to be on quarantine. But there are also the nicer people who appreciate the calls, Walker said. A lot of elderly people like talking to us, she said. Contact tracers don't just put people in quarantine. They also answer questions, provide guidance, and keep in touch with the people they contact. People in quarantine get daily check-in calls unless they request a text or email instead, and some older adults are even reluctant to see that end, Walker said. Those check-in calls or texts include 4 questions, she said. Have you taken your temperature today? Do you have any symptoms? Have you left the house in the past 24 hours? Do you need anything? The health district responds to those needs by supplying most of them, she said. Staff members have delivered boxes of food, disposable diapers, thermometers, prescription medications, cleaning supplies, and toilet paper, but have had to decline requests to provide alcohol, Walker said. Phillips, who has helped with contact tracing in Douglas County, said, probably 3/4 of the people contacted cooperate. One major issue is that so many people won't answer calls from numbers they don't recognize, she said. She understands, she said, but she'd also appreciate it if people would set up their voicemail and return calls to the health department. She'd also like people to know contact tracers can only call close contacts of infected people when those people share the names, which some infected people are reluctant to do. While the infected person's name isn't shared with his or her close contacts, Phillips said, I think there is a fear on behalf of several I've spoken with who did not feel comfortable sharing another person's name and information because they did not want them to be told that they needed to quarantine for 14 days. We can't put you in jail. For those considering becoming contact tracers, Walker said, you need to have patience, confidence, and the ability to handle confrontation. Moms and older people tend to have an easier time being able to tell people what they need to do, she said. We tell a lot of people we can't police you, we can't put you in jail, but we would appreciate it if you would cooperate with us, Walker said. Her request to those being called by contact tracers, leave politics out of this and realize it's for the sake of your health. If we could get the community to work with us and quarantine when we ask them to, I'm sure it would stop the surge in this county, she said. Pride adds a request of her own. Please be nice to the people when they call you, she urged. They're doing their job, and they're trying to put this pandemic down as much as we can. Continuing with Top of the Morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossall. From kindergarten on, Champaign's Drew Adams, Nick Johnson, and Connor Milton attended almost every Illinois home football game together. The 2020 Central High grads were there again Saturday in the form of cutouts ordered by Drew's mom, Prudence. I thought it'd be special that the three boys could still sit together and watch the game, she said. It's been 5 months since Drew, 18, died when the canoe he was in capsized on a lake in Wisconsin. He is buried at Roselawn Cemetery, and family and friends gathering there during the U of I's home opener where they could see the scoreboard and hear the sounds coming from nearby Memorial Stadium. It was hard, Pruden said, but it was like watching the game with Drew. A scholarship created by Drew's friends at Central to be awarded for the first time in May continues to receive community support, with more than $37,000 raised. Visit newsgazette.com for information on how to contribute. Nick and Connor are freshmen at Illinois. On Saturday morning, they visited Memorial Stadium for their first close-up look at the cutouts. It made me smile, Pruden said. Those three boys have an amazing bond. And continuing with history, this day in history, area history in 1920. One of two Ford cars racing at a high speed on Green Street struck a University of Illinois student on a bicycle and seriously injured him. The accident happened at Green and Matthews Streets. The student was taken to the university hospital. In 1970, Michigan maintained its magic over Illinois with a 42-0 win before 70,781 fans in Ann Arbor. 17 members of the Illinois team were injured, Coach Jim Valick said after the game. The Illini dropped to 3-5 for the season. In 2005, rebuffed in Champaign, the CU Smoke-Free Alliance moved on to asking the Urbana City Council to consider banning smoking in public places. And Urbana Mayor Laurel Pressing said the city would hold at least one public hearing on the issue, though not right away. We'll consider it, Pressing said. It probably won't be until January because we've got so much on our agenda. We'll have a public hearing where people can voice their views. International history. Today's highlight, on November 8, 2016, Republican Donald Trump was elected America's 45th president, defeating Democrat Hillary Clinton in an astonishing victory for a celebrity businessman and political novice. Republicans kept their majorities in the Senate and House. On this date, in 1793, the Louvre began admitting the public, even though the French Museum had been officially open since August. And in 1861, during the Civil War, the USS San Jacinto intercepted a British mail steamer, the Trent, and detained a pair of Confederate diplomats who were en route to Europe to seek support for the Southern cause. Although the Trent affair strained relations between the U.S. and Britain, the matter was quietly resolved with the release of the diplomats the following January. And continuing with Jay Simpson, Jay's take, the difference between the two. From my experience in life and having a white best friend, I've noticed something over the years. White men can make mistakes in life and still have equal opportunities to be successful. A black man can't make any mistakes in life, or his chances to be successful are very slim, almost to where it would take a miracle. In order for a kid like myself to be successful, after coming up under the circumstances I did, they have to have a plan and it has to be executed perfectly. One slip up is all it takes, because in society's eyes, we are going to fail anyway. White men typically don't have these worries. It's sad, but that is just how it goes. White privilege is alive and real, and it took for my best friend, who's white, to point it out to me. He just one day pointed out the mistakes he's made and how it didn't take away from his success one bit. While on the other hand, if it was me, because of the color of my skin, I would probably be doing jail time or killed by the cops. This is something that will probably go on forever, but I just want to say, I respect all the people who are not of our color, who actually see things from our point of view. You guys understand that the way we are treated is not right, and you let it be known that you don't stand for it. Thank you for that. Also, to the ones that let it be known that they don't believe in white privilege, thank you too. Thanks for showing your true colors and making it easy for me and people like me to part ways with you. I don't have any hate in my heart for any person of any color, but I will not associate with anyone who doesn't know right from wrong. We can't stop the privilege, but we can definitely acknowledge it. Peace to all. Jay Simpson writes for the News Gazette, and his column appears Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, and he can be reached at jsimpson@newsgazette.com. And a little note on this week's Prairie Skies from David Leake. Early risers have a treat this week, as we have an excellent morning view of Mercury along with Venus. Greatest separation from the sun's glare occurs Tuesday morning. Look in the east-southeast just before 6 a.m. Venus will appear like a brilliant star. Right below it is the bluish star Spica. Mercury will be to the lower left of Spica. On Thursday morning, a thin crescent moon will sit above Venus. The orange star Arcturus will be far to the left of the moon. And on Friday morning, the moon is placed between the two planets. If you're up walking the dog, watch how Venus appears to close in on Spica, with the two being side by side Wednesday morning of next week. We'll take a short break now and return with a second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, November 8th, 2020. Please stay tuned.